Hello.
Good evening. Hi, this is Shannon from Rochester. Who else do we have on the call right now?
Pam Smith from Gainesville, Florida.
Hi, Pam.
Walter Sylvester from Ocala, Florida.
Diana Nielsen from Wilmington, North Carolina.
Gainesville, Florida.
Mary Nance from Gainesville, Florida.
Patty Latai from Salida, Colorado.
Mary Lee from Doctor in Gainesville, Florida.
Who else do we have from the West Coast?
Judy Kimmel from Mill Valley, California.
Terry Mason from Encino, California.
Matthew Albrock from Oakland, California.
Nancy Merritt from San Francisco, home of the Ninth Circuit Court of Appeals.
Wow.
I'm Sue Hullum, this is Wisconsin.
Wow, Wisconsin, it's great. I think we'll just give it another minute, and then we'll get started to see who else comes aboard. If you're just tuning in, feel free to introduce yourself and let us know where you're from.
Hi, this is Diana. Who am I talking with?
This is Shannon Betters from Rochester.
I'm sorry, who?
Shannon Betters from Rochester. I'm the Community Peace Building Council Lead.
Well, wonderful. Thank you.
Nice to hear from you.
It's my first time. I'm very excited.
Oh, you're going to love it.
Oh, I hope so. I'm so looking forward to it.
Who else do we have on to introduce themselves that hasn't yet?
Hi, I'm Gloria Trevino from San Antonio, Texas.
Texas is wonderful, Gloria. Okay, well, it's 8:34 by my watch, so I think we're going to get started. And I just want to say good evening to everyone. Again, my name is Shannon Betters. I am from Rochester, New York, and have recently been selected to be the Peace Alliance Leadership Council Community Peacebuilding Lead. I am very honored to be introducing each of you to Hart Phoenix and Jeffrey Weisberg, the founders of the River Phoenix Center for Peacebuilding in Gainesville, Florida. Both Hart and Jeffrey were founding members of the Peace Alliance and in the past have served on our board of directors. Hart is currently on the board of directors for the River Phoenix Center for Peacebuilding, a nonprofit whose mission is to provide and promote the best practices and principles of peacebuilding and global sustainability. Jeffrey serves as a Florida State certified mediator and mediates cases involving juvenile offenders, family disputes, and small business conflicts, as well as many other things that he provides for the community of Gainesville and Florida abroad. The organization is guided by the inspiration and activism of Hart's beloved Sun River. Having attended a boundaries workshop from four women, and most recently the community peacebuilding immersion training in 2016 at the River Phoenix Center for Peacebuilding, I can testify to the love and sincerity given to every detail of evidence-based programming they are developing as a model for communities from all over the world to mirror as we all work to cultivate and maintain peace one community at a time. I'm going to now let Judy Kimmel take it from here. She is our chair and treasurer for the Peace Alliance, and has a couple of words she'd like to share with you. Judy?
Thank you, Shannon. Delighted to be on this call, as always, and delighted to hear all the voices from all of the United States, and thrilled that you're going to have an opportunity to spend almost an hour with Hart and Jeffrey and hearing about their really actually profound work that they do in Gainesville, and also something that they are modeling and we hope to have spread throughout this country. It's profound work. Before they get started, I asked if I could have a few moments tonight because I wanted to acknowledge both Hart and Jeffrey, particularly Hart, since she has been, as you've heard from Shannon, the founder, one of the main founders of our organization, has really been with our organizations from the very ground, original seeds in the ground up until now. And she is going to be stepping away from our boards as and she has been on our boards the entire time. And she will be stepping away to spend a bit more time focusing on the River Phoenix Center and all you're going to hear tonight. But we wanted as an organization to acknowledge her tonight and really thank her for the years of service. I think now almost 13 years of dedication to the Peace Alliance and Peace Alliance Educational Institute. So I wanted to just read a letter that we will be framing and sending to her that it's a formal acknowledgement of very deep-seated, warm, grateful feelings we have for Hart. And really, quite frankly, if she hadn't been with us for this road that we've been on, we would not be here today, and we would not be able to make contributions we currently make. So we're deeply grateful. So I'll quickly read this letter, and then I'll let both Hart and Jeffrey get on and share their amazing work. So, dear Hart, on behalf of the boards of the Peace Alliance and Peace Alliance Educational Institute, we want to deeply thank you for your long dedication and unwavering support of peace building and our organization, its evolving vision, and your personal commitment to its founding, our work, and to our network of supporters throughout the country. Your efforts for peace and peace building extend to the impressive work you have done since the foundation of our organization. Through these last many years, and for your commitment to supporting peace building initiatives at all levels of our society, the work you have done has manifested in national and regional legislation impacting youth violence prevention, global peacekeeping, social justice, international treaties, and bringing community peace building and restorative justice to the forefront of our national conversation. We deeply appreciate your role as one of our founders, having been the face of the Peace Alliance throughout this country. Our boards and staff acknowledge you for your lifetime of dedication, particularly knowing how much needs to be accomplished within our nation for peace-building programs in our schools and communities. Your efforts have been a gift to thousands and will continue in the work you do in partnership with us and in your own expansive endeavors. Thank you for being a steadfast and critical leader of our organization. We will miss you deeply in-house, yet look forward to your role on our National Advisory Board. With deep respect and appreciation, Judy Kimmel, Terry Mason, on behalf of both of our boards and our organization at large. So, Hart, I could talk about you for years and not really completely express the gratitude we all have for who you are and what you represent in the world, and certainly what you've done for this organization. But we also send heartfelt support for what you all are going to be hearing about tonight, and we look forward in partnering with you and Jeffrey into the future for many, 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 many more years. So thank you. And with that, I'll turn this call over to you both, and I'm very excited myself to hear the newest news from River Phoenix Center for Peace Building.
Oh, thank you so much, Judy, and Terry, and Matthew, and Shannon, and everyone else that's on the call tonight. That was quite a way to start the call. Let me take a deep breath and welcome everybody. Thank you for being on the call. As you shared that letter, it is so important for everybody to understand that as much as one gives and as much as I gave to the Peace Alliance, I got it back a hundredfold, not only in relationships, but in learning and in understanding how to model the work that we all want to see in the world and yet how hard it is to actually live it. And I think through the relationships that we built with one another through the years in the Peace Alliance up till now, and it will continue to be sure, it has helped enhance all of our personal lives and our personal ability to be in relationship. And actually, that's what we believe it's all about at the River Phoenix Center for Peace Building. That is what we consider the greatest part of the success that we've had within a community is actually taking the time to get to know community members, stakeholders, and deeply listening to what the need is, deeply listening to what the work is, deeply listening to the people that are actually seeking services. So that has been a great gift, the great gift of being open and helping to create a comprehensive model, understanding that it's not just one thing that's going to change a whole society, change consciousness, but it's going to take creating the web, the threads that will weave us together so that we can stand really strong with something for everyone. Within that, I just want to say that I've learned so much through lobbying, just how to really speak to the need and to the listening of congressmen, of law enforcement, of governmental officials, of the school people, of the juvenile justice system, and of the actual people themselves that are caught within that system that we all want to see emerge as a peaceful and restorative culture. So with that, I would say that I would like to just share a moment on how we actually did this, how we came into this community. And we kind of did it because of the Department of Peace legislation or what we learned through that, the need to research, articulate, and communicate the nonviolent solutions to the problems that are in the world. And we became solutionaries from that. We entered everywhere we went, every meeting, every person we met with solutions rather than sharing the problem and kind of blaming people or kind of letting them know just what was wrong. Instead, we came and said, wow, you've had some really hard jobs to do here. These are big, big, big organizations that are oftentimes very stoic because it has been the way that it has been for so long. And so what we did was kind of come in and with understanding and empathy, just kind of really be there with them and wait to hear what it is that we could bring to them. And at those moments, with patience and with love and with a deep desire to really see the transformation, we were able to kind of share some of the gems that we learned through the work that we had experienced in the Peace Alliance, through the conferences, through the different programs that we saw that were happening internationally and nationally. And we were able to bring it to a smaller community and to see, will it really work? If we do the research, if we are able to advocate and articulate solutions, and if we are able to facilitate them, would people want them? How could that happen? And slowly but surely, and almost pretty quickly, it started to take hold. And obviously, you know some of the what some of the actual programs are that we're talking about. What Jeffrey will go in a little bit more depth about that, just about what it is that we were offering. But the last thing I want to say before he does do that is that when we started, the relationships, we started going to meetings. Within any kind of city or county, there are meetings of juvenile justice councils. There's the school board meetings. There are just meetings at the university. Just started plugging in and listening. Before we even offered anything, we started to educate ourselves. What is really going on here? And how is it that we can not insert ourselves in a way that we have the answer, but insert ourselves as part of, possibly part of, some of the solutions? And how can we help make that happen? How can we pilot programs? So we started introducing ourselves to the general public through events. We got a movie called The Interrupters. We downloaded it. We found out that the woman that was one of the interrupters that we called and said, could we bring her here? And we brought her to Gainesville. And because of that, we then had an in with the law enforcement and said, we want to screen this movie. We showed them part of it. They wanted to partner with it. We created a march to end bullying. We did all of these kinds of things on our own. And when we started to really bring them forward, we sought partners, people that would want to be a part of ending bullying. So it was Peaceful Paths, domestic violence groups. And pretty soon we started to develop partnerships. And honestly, this, what we're doing here is a collaborative effort, that we know that we can't do everything. We don't want to do everything. We're not equipped to do everything. There are people that are mavens at some of the work that we all do, that are, you know, university people, some professors. It's amazing what talent there is within the community. So if we don't do it, we certainly can advocate for it. We can make it part of our initiative. We can work together to publicize it. So that's kind of what we did in order to get to the place where we can now say that we are able to offer a comprehensive model that we think can be translated to almost any community. You ready, Jeffrey?
Sure. Good evening, everybody. That was such a beautiful letter, Judy, and the board for acknowledging Hart. She sure is a champion peace builder, peacemaker. So thank you for that beautiful blessing. And it's great to be on the phone with all y'all from around the country. I'm sure we may know a few of you, but many of you we haven't met yet. So looking forward to that. But we wanted to share just a little bit about what programs we actually deliver through the center and how they show up in our two-week immersion that is coming up, that we'll, you know, share the dates about that specifically. So I often like to start by just either reminding people or sharing this idea of peace building, that peace building is a comprehensive approach to any community or society's challenges. And when there are acts of violence or conflict, as Marshall Rosenberg says, that all violence is an expression of an unmet need. So we clearly have many areas of unmet needs. And so peace building as a field strives to bring to bear resources and services and support that strive to lift everyone into their highest potential. And so what we're finding is that in this comprehensive approach, that we need to look at education and economic disparities and racial disparities in healthcare and in housing, poverty, the criminal justice system. So all of these different areas are interconnected. And if we don't take that comprehensive approach, then what we're finding is that you can have these pockets of success, but once you go home or into the schools or into the criminal justice system, then there's all these other factors that can keep people down. So the commonality or the common ground that we've found is that when you think about violence and conflict, yes, we have it within ourselves, but it's usually in relationship with other people. And so what we focused on is creating a curriculum for 10 classes or 10 weeks that addresses social and emotional learning. And that has to do with self-awareness, self-regulation, motivation, social skills, and empathy. And so we teach young people primarily on probation and in schools about those different things in a very experiential way. And then at the last class, the young people get to teach back to their community and their parents and other people. And what we found is that the Department of Juvenile Justice likes this so much and supports it because they'd rather have their young people learning things than picking up trash, is they give them 100% extra bonus for community service hours. And we're adapting this social-emotional learning curriculum with young people using theater, and we do it in detention centers, and we're talking with the Department of Corrections to go into the nation's largest women's prison and train some of the residents to become facilitators to then carry that work forward. So we're really excited, and we're seeing some great results around that social-emotional learning. And then we also really work with restorative practices. We call it community circles or restorative circles. And so we offer a two-day training, and it's also within the immersion where people can learn the facilitation principles of that and some of the guiding philosophy and questions and where to apply that. So we're making great strides of growing restorative practices in the state of Florida. We have a contract with the Department of Juvenile Justice to get referrals for young people as a diversion. And as a matter of fact, just today I did a circle with two. One boy was 10 and another was 11. They got in a fight, and the police are really committed to reducing arrests. And so they referred the case to us, and we had their families come in. And the windup of it is that the boys want to be friends, and that we worked in the agreement some ways for them to work together, and that the police want it as a policy to not arrest 9, 10, 11-year-olds. So that's another example of having these strong relationships where we can affect policy changes. Another area that we're working with is what's called disproportionate minority contact or racial and ethnic disparities. And it refers to more black and brown citizens entering the criminal justice system than white people, and also the other disparities that exist in so many of our different systems. And so our particular approach is to offer a police youth dialogue where we bring black and brown youth together with police for a 5-hour training. And we've trained about 90% of the police department, about 30% of the sheriff's office, and the entire police force at a local college and some at the university. And what it does is it seeks to break down some of the stereotypes. I don't know if you folks have seen Van Jones did a piece that was so powerful about how law enforcement feel threatened, and young, particularly black and brown youth, feel threatened. And bringing those two voices together helps to humanize and build relationships and support this idea of community policing. So it's a very, very successful program that we're starting to expand throughout the state of Florida. And then one of the other main ones that we're really working with is this idea of trauma. And if you've heard of ACEs, which stands for Adverse Childhood Experiences, there was a great study done in 1995 to 97 that really was able to identify these factors that had long-term health impacts for adults. And so the research on trauma and ACEs and toxic stress has grown tremendously. And so when we're thinking about peace building, you know, there's this intergenerational trauma that exists for many people. And so unless we can break that cycle of violence and support resilience building in all levels, educationally and in the criminal justice system, that we're going to see that continuation. So there's a movement that's slowly growing called a trauma-responsive community initiative. So all of these things, and actually many more, are what we teach in our two-week immersion. We have 1 week in April and another week in October to really focus on the curriculum and the philosophy, but also to grow people's confidence and competence in facilitation. Because what we see, and Shannon's a wonderful example, and many other folks who have gone through the training, that a lot of times it's just like a lack of confidence. And so we really focus on giving people the opportunity to practice, getting in front of the group and grappling with putting together a little program and how they want to articulate and to use conflict resolution skills and deep communication and listening skills to then go out into their communities and grow pieces of the immersion or their own projects. And so this is kind of a call to action where we see many people really wanting to make a difference and wanting to get engaged in community development, but not necessarily knowing where to go or what that they can contribute. So this is an opportunity to learn some very practical applications of these kinds of programs. And then one of the things that's really exciting is that we have a number of panel discussions with our partners in Department of Juvenile Justice, law enforcement, education, mental health. These folks come together to share what they do and how peace building fits into their work, and then how you can get some coaching and advice when you go home to your community, how you could work with their counterparts to create some new relationships and open doors. So that's kind of an overview, and Matthew, we're so happy to take some questions and have a discussion of what does community peacebuilding mean to you, and how might you apply some of these particular areas in your home areas.
Great. So what folks can do is push the one key on your keypad, and then we'll call on you for questions, as Jeffrey mentioned. So do so. And maybe while we're waiting, I love the story about the two young boys. Do you have any other stories, either of you, like a little success story or something that might make it a little more alive for folks to hear a little kind of like how did something start and finish?
Yeah, there was another really profound story where one of our dear friends who is a doctor and professor at the university, she's one of our main champions of trauma. Her daughter just got married maybe about 6 weeks ago, and at the one of the parties at their house, the police, a SWAT team, busted through the door. And there was only one black young man in the crowd, and they came in with their weapons drawn and made the young man get down on the ground. They put cuffs on him, and it was so traumatizing to everybody in the party, not the least of which is this young man and his family. And it turns out that it was a mistake, that they had, like on your cell phone, this little beacon or something, and it turns out the guy was next door. And so what we are doing in a couple of weeks is to do a sort of circle with his family and with the police department and other folks that were involved in it to address this incident and the harm and the trauma that it actually caused to these people, and to look at ways of this not happening again, and for the police to take some responsibility and at least, if nothing else, just listen to the impact that that experience had on our citizens.
That would be powerful, I'm sure. We do have one hand up now. It is, or a couple, Heather. Go ahead, Heather.
Hey there, this is actually Kelly from Virginia, and I just wanted to ask, hi Jeffrey, I just wanted to ask you, given what I've seen as a public school teacher given as soon as the election was over, there has been a sharp increase in hate activities that the teenagers are demonstrating. And one, you know, in specific, you know, in my small school, things that would have never been done. And I guess, you know, I'm wondering, because when it comes from, like, kind of when it's and then perceived permission to behave this way, there really is a lack of taking ownership. And I guess the question is, because it's been racial, it's been, you know, anti-Semitic behavior, it's been racial anti-Latino behavior, anti-African-American behavior, and there's a way that the students that are committing these kind of hate crimes, and they are hate crimes, are that they feel like they are entitled to behave this way, which makes it much more difficult for them to take ownership when it comes to, you know, a circle or trying to repair a relationship. So I guess I just wanted to get some feedback or guidance about, or is that happening in other places in the country, or, you know, or is it specific to our community?
Well, hi, Kelly. So good to hear your voice. I think it's happening all over the country, and it's just mind blowing to me that our leaders in that respect, especially the, you know, in this example, is exemplifying certain behavior. And so I think there is you're right. And there's lots of evidence to show that there has been an increase in hate crimes across the board. So, you know, what I'm finding, regardless of the political climate and temperament of people, that when we are talking about personal relationships, that's where we can affect change. You know, one of the greatest ways, in my opinion, to break through racism or homophobia or any of those kinds of dynamics is for us to understand each other and to work together. And so, you know, this idea that Hart mentioned around solutionary, that we're really going for what we want, not what we don't want. And I think it takes a lot of attention on our part to model that and demonstrate that and advocate for that and always return to it. And sometimes, my goodness, we might want to yell or scream or even hit back. And now more than ever, I really see the power of, you know, peaceful resistance. But I think we need to be modeling for our young people and for each other.
I just want to add that I met a principal at one of the high schools the other day at a meeting and just had a really nice conversation with her. She knew what we were doing because of our police dialogues, but that was it. I never saw her before. And then a week later, I got a text from her, and she said she is taking her entire 175 students to see Hidden Figures. It happens to be tomorrow, and she wanted to know if Jeffrey and I would join them to go there with the hope that a new level of understanding and respect amongst the students would arise from watching that. So there is a way where, you know, school personnel as well as we can think out of the box. How do we show a demonstrative way of being different than just kind of, you know, just either accepting it or getting angry about it. So that's all we got. So anyway, tomorrow we are going to see Hidden Figures with 175 high school students and the principal.
Great. Thank you. Yeah, great. We did take our school to that too last week, so I recommend it.
Oh, good.
Thank you so much.
Thank you, Kelly.
Okay.
So next up we have Pam. Pam, you're on.
Okay, hi. This is Pam Smith. I am right here in Gainesville with you guys. I am one of the people that's working right now on the national, I don't know what we call it, something like a resistance movement. And I'm wondering if your center could provide any nonviolent resistance training for people. We're going to be organizing a lot of marches and things, very public displays of resistance, and I feel very strongly that they have to stay nonviolent. And so I'm wondering if you all have put some thought into whether this is something, or if you got your hands full with the local, you know, and even statewide programs.
Oh, thank you for your question, Pam. I look forward to meeting you. We probably crossed paths before. But so that kind of training is not our expertise. But there are people that do that around the country, and so we can talk about that offline. You can check out our website, get in touch with us. And there's
You might know of people who are doing that.
Yes, ma'am.
I went through that kind of training back in the late 70s, and it was really helpful. But I haven't heard of it in the last time, you know, in quite a while.
Yeah. Yeah, so that's really important for this movement that's happening around the country. So feel free to reach out to us on our website. I think my email is there, or Heart's email is there.
Okay.
But thank you for your passion and your work to keep it nonviolent, but keep it really loud and super clear. This is what you stand for.
Yes, and I really appreciated your emphasis on what we want, not what we're against.
Uh-huh. Yes.
Yeah.
Yes. Great. Thank you, Pam.
Mm-hmm.
Okay, we have one more hand up. Just a reminder for anybody else who wants to ask questions, you can push the one on your keypad. I'm opening it up for Gloria now.
Hi, good evening. I have a question on the classes that you have in April and in October. Are those in class? And if not, do you have anything online?
No, they're actually an immersion. It's actually a residential immersion. We have a really beautiful retreat space here in Gainesville, Florida. So it's an opportunity to not only learn everything that we shared about and more, but to also have adventure and fun and community and great food, and also to be really, really in it. When we say immersion, we mean immersed in living with respect and care and love.
And also you would have the opportunity to actually observe a real live police youth dialogue and to meet some of the community members. But the online piece is in our hearts and minds someday, but we really feel strongly that you can't replace getting your hands kind of dirty and in that respect of really rubbing shoulders and working this stuff out. You know, and peace building is not it's not for the faint-hearted. It's real live stuff, you know. And Lao Tzu talks about in conflict, be fair and generous. And so how is it that we strengthen ourselves and at the same time soften ourselves to be able to be in conflict, to be in discord, to be in chaos and hold the center, because that is to us one of the most important and valuable contributions that we can make for change. And so that's what we strive to do, is help grow that even more in people. And the people that have come to our immersion have been very, very wide. We had a doctor from the University of Florida who developed the arts and medicine program. We have a nurse midwife who wants to bring it to all the midwives of the country. We have environmental activists, a yoga teacher, mommies, you know, the whole gamut, social workers. And so there may be, you know, if peace building is something that you're interested in really going deeper in, we're so happy to have personal conversations with people, you know, to answer more specific questions if ever you are interested.
Okay, thank you.
I'm wondering, I was wondering if Shannon had anything.
I'm here.
Yeah, I don't know if there's another question, but I'd love to, you know, maybe hear your voice.
You know, my personal experience with the immersion was just this life transformational investment in myself. You come in and first of all, the immersion idea is so perfect for what this program is about, because you really do kind of have to leave the world behind and just go in, and you kind of, it's like going underwater. You're going into this really safe place with other like-minded people who really want to help people. And it's hard work, but it's really amazing at the same time. It's a paradox to be a, you know, a 40-year-old woman and to see a police youth dialogue happening in front of me, where I'm looking at these teenage young women who are, you know, in trouble, maybe for the first time, maybe for the second time, really down on themselves at the beginning of a police youth dialogue. They go from having just, you can see the shame they wear, or their fear almost in their body language about what's going to happen as they have this dialogue and then a dinner with a police officer, to within hours, just joy in the room and these young women standing up in front of a group of people telling what their dreams are. And you can tell that these women haven't been asked what their dreams are. What do you want to do for the rest of your life? What would you like to become? You can tell people maybe didn't take care of these children the way they should have, and that for the first time in their life, somebody is looking at them as a human being that can actually do something. And I was just amazed, because I was sitting there hoping with another friend of mine, you know, that you, when you're in an immersion, you have these bonds you create, and you're sitting there and you're watching all of this go on, and these young ladies stand up and, I'd like to be a police officer someday, you know, I'd like to be a doctor. And they're realizing that we're really looking at them like, well, you can do that. And it's true. And that's what this world needs, is investments in each other, human investments. That's what solutionaries do. You know, I don't often mention this because it just doesn't come up, but Hart and Jeffrey gave me a partial scholarship, you know, as a single mother of two kids, wouldn't have necessarily been able to do it on my own. I am a small business owner. I am now a yoga instructor, inspirationally through what happened at the immersion, but this is just one of the best investments I could have asked for. You know, the racial disparity discussions at this time are so needed. The thing about this work is that people are afraid of these conversations, and even if you've made this phone call tonight, you're brave enough to want to have them. And, you know, I just think it's amazing to be a part of this. I, you know, would be willing to answer questions to anybody interested in going to the next immersion. I'm very jealous of you. I would like to be going myself. But, you know, they've trained me, and I'm on my way now. And it's just amazing. So thank you.
Thank you, Shannon.
So we have another hand up from Tom. On.
Yes, hi. Can you hear me?
Hi, Tom.
Hi. Yeah, my question is this. I think, you know, pretty much for most of my life I've been able, maybe not perfect, but pretty able to hear what I consider, quote unquote, the other side. And, you know, and I have a strong belief that the opposite of love is fear, not hate. But I am finding that I am having such a hard time listening now to what I consider the other side. And, you know, you talked earlier about cooperation and, you know, working with each other in ways for the community, for the nation, et cetera. And I'm just wondering, Hart, Jeffrey, if you can talk to that in any way, the difficulty that I'm having, and I'm guessing maybe some other people are having with just wanting to hear the other side.
Well, I can so appreciate that, Tom. Thank you for that comment and question. And you know what comes to my mind is that we're not going to like everybody. We're not going to get along with everybody. That's a wonderful dream, but I don't think it's going to happen. And to me, it's really okay that we totally disagree with some people and some ideas, and to have an expectation that you should work with them, it may not serve you. It may not serve us collectively necessarily, and yet there is so much need in communities. I would say just about every community. There's such a range of needs and issues that we can put our energy towards. And the political system is such a black hole in some respects. I know that we can influence a lot, but some of it is just slippery and a bit of a black hole. So I choose to not put a whole lot of my energy there, but to affect people's personal ideas and experiences and to work with their influence. And so that's why we have the relationship with the police chief and the captain and the chief of probation and the superintendent and the sheriff. So there's many areas, and some of these people may believe quite different, but they have some idea that what's happening currently is not working, and they do want help to create a new way forward.
I think that what we're finding here is that as we humanize each other, it becomes beyond political beliefs. That, you know, in a community, when you step into what's actually here and you start to meet each other on the level, everybody wants to go home at night. Everybody wants their children to be healthy. Everybody wants very, very similar things. The strategies are so different. But as the relationships develop, it is extraordinary. I mean, we have the captain of the police department who was absolutely against everything we brought to him. Now he's one of our very best friends. His life has totally changed. The same thing with the deputy at the sheriff's department who now runs the DMC office there. The Department of Juvenile Justice chief who said she wanted to just lock him up. She never really heard the other side. She never heard that you could actually go from punitive to restorative, and that there is no recidivism generally when that happens, that they understand that these locking people up when there's a mistake only makes them worse and that they come out eventually. And so it's really a change of consciousness. And I often say this is the most spiritual work that we've ever done, and I've been doing this for so many years. But this is, it's creating these personal relationships that are really helping to not only transform the other, but also transforming ourselves to be more expansive, to start to understand more why people think the way they think and why they behave the way they behave. Because ultimately, at the core, we're all the same. I mean, we're all, you know, sacred gifts of the mystery of the universe. We don't really know how we got here, and we don't really know where we're going. And that being said, how can we do anything but love each other? If we love each other, that's all we got to do. We can't change anybody else, but we can be the greatest version of our loving self. And it's not like you can get it from a book. And Tom, I happen to know you personally. You are one of the most loving people that I know.
Thank you, Hart.
So like and love are two different things, that's for sure.
Mm-hmm.
We have one more. You all want to take another? What's your timeline?
Sure.
Oops. Okay, there we go. Sue, you're on.
Hello. One thing that I'm really struggling with, and with the work I've been doing with the peace learning circles in our community, and this whole idea of this divide that I keep hearing people talk about, is that there's this idea that if I might be wrong, you must be wrong, and we're not sitting down to the table to talk about ways to work together. We're continuing to make the divide larger. And it's not, we're looking at it's either or rather than both and looking for a third alternative or another way to work towards peace. So in working with this, I'm really struggling with that. And I'm wondering if someone can give me some insight on how to bring people together. Someone once told me recently, if you're not at the table, you're on the menu. So it seems like we need to have more people sitting down at the table talking rather than dividing and making another side that we disagree with wrong.
That's such a beautiful question and challenge to us all. And, you know, for years I lived in my very comfortable bubble and loved it there. I was very content and happy. And then starting to do this work, I really intentionally sought out people who were different from me. And in that process, what I have found is this common field that we can meet in and relate in and play in and work together in. And the more that we are able to do that with a variety of people, that helps create this web and connection in a community that can withstand a police shooting or can withstand other challenges or tragedies. So those personal relationships, and particularly with those who are different from us, is what we kind of practice. And so I think with what you're talking about, again, some you just won't relate to and won't like and won't be able to make any inroads, but I've made it my personal life challenge to work with conflict in a very intentional and conscious way. And what's on the other side of conflict is a great potential for deep and meaningful relationships and collaboration and the release of a lot of energy. So it does take some skill. If we get triggered and we get or get deflated or get reactionary, those can set us back, and it's normal. But like Shannon was saying, and we were saying earlier, that peace building is not necessarily an easy thing. It can be messy, but I really believe that what's required for us to bridge that divide of difference is requires a high degree of self-restraint, communication skills, deep empathy and listening, and some other tools to be able to facilitate the shift from a position into understanding the interests and needs that lie beneath it.
So, thank you. Thank you. I know that, Judy, I think that you wanted to share something before the evening closed, or somebody at the Peace Alliance did. I just want to thank everybody for being on this call and for the generosity of Matthew and the rest of the staff to help make this happen through the Peace Alliance Network.
So this is Judy, and you guys are such an inspiration, have been an inspiration for years, and I've been to their space in Gainesville, and the work they do and the place they create, the space they create to be in is quite phenomenal. So I encourage those who are on the call who have a thought about going to this immersion to really go for it, because they're such healing people and wonderful models for who we all want to be on the planet. So thank you guys, and love being partners with you in this great work that we're all doing. Everyone on this call is a peace builder, and I appreciate that.
That's right.
It's Woo-hoo. Not easy. Woohoo! So I just had a quick comment, and then I'll turn it back to whomever. I just wanted to let people on the call know that we every month we have a national call, and this month we're having one, and it's always this month it's different because it ended up being on Valentine's Day, so it's now going to be on February 21st, and we're very excited about it. We will be, for one, Shannon, who has been our host on this call tonight, is, as she spoke, one of our new council members, and that's kind of our advisory council, governing council for the Peace Alliance, and we're very excited to have these amazing people coming together to really serve as an assembly and a guiding body for us in moving forward in our work. And we will be introducing those people on that call. We will also be focusing a little bit on advocacy and lobbying ideas and tips and how to kind of transform this amazing energy that's happening in this country to make a difference, and how we can become really responsible at modeling peace-building citizens, and how to advocate without, as we was discussed earlier this evening, proactively rather than making people wrong, making things and issues right and advocating for those. So we'll be covering that. And actually, there's a lot to cover. The Department of Peace-Building bill is going to be reintroduced this month, and so we will be spending some time learning how we can make a difference in terms of supporting that and getting support in our Congress for that bill. So just wanted to remind people to keep their eyes out. You'll be getting email notifications on that call. And I think I should turn it back to Shannon and Jeff and Hart. I'm sure you have some last words. Maybe you might want to give people the dates of the immersion so that they can look to see whether it'll work in their schedules.
Excellent.
Well, this is Shannon, and I just want to again say, if there comes to be any questions as to, you know, what my experience was, I don't want to take up any more time here, but I would be more than willing to answer questions. It was definitely one of most amazing things I've ever done for myself. That being said, I don't think you're going to find a program like this anywhere else. I've looked. And, there's great things happening, but this is really a comprehensive way to become involved. And I'm just grateful to be participating on the call tonight. So I'm going to let Hart and Jeffrey take it out.
So you can look at our website. It's called centerforpeacebuilding.org. But the first week is April 7th to the 14th, and then October 6th to the 11th. And so there's more details on there. But my parting words is just a blessing to the peacemakers, and you know, just to have the faith and the courage that beyond the conflict, beyond the discord or the disagreement, that there is a place that we can meet to care and show love for each other. So thank you all for your wonderful listening.
Yes. Thank you so much, and have a really, really wonderful night. And I hope that you feel a little bit more nourished and more at peace, because as it's been said, we are all faces of peace. And no matter what we do, no matter how active we are or inactive, whatever role we play in this life, we have the opportunity to be a face of peace. And so I know all of you are, and that gives me a lot of comfort. So have a wonderful night, and thank you again.
Thank you.
Thank
opening
you.
Up the line.
Good
night.
Good night. Good
night.
Good
night.
Bye.
Love you all. Good night.